Hi, everybody. My name is Stevie B. I'm a recovering alcoholic. My home.
Hi, Stevie.
Come on. That's some awesome stuff right there. Oh, so beautiful. Hi, everybody. My name is Stephen B. I'm a recovering alcoholic. My home group is the Golden Text Group of Hollywood, Florida. And I'm very happy to be here with you guys tonight. Thank you to that panel. Even though after my sponsor canceled Russell Spatz because he has COVID or had COVID at the time, and he wasn't going to be able to fly, I produced a tape and you guys picked me, so I really appreciate it. It's been really wonderful and scary at the same time because I haven't been to Wikipaw in I haven't been to any of the paws in a long time in like over like 25 or 30 years and you guys are definitely the wildest Ikipaw that I've been to in several years. Yeah. And plus I was sitting next to the guy that says say it again for the 10th step, say it again. And all the people last night, I was next to that guy. And which was scary for us, right? I brought my friends here, and we were scared. We were really scared. That's you. Yeah, I remember you last night, and I'm still recovering from that. So, but the love that you guys have shown me and my friends and getting to know George and Tina and getting to know Brian and Matt. Matt picked me up at the airport, and Andre has just been really amazing, and that's what's so incredible about Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. The gentleman that has the one day. What's your name? They both have one day? Well, that's really 2 days then. The gentlemen, the people that have the one day. I was that guy 22 years ago. I was the guy at the conference that got the signed big book. My wife had brought me there after I had 7 years and just relapsed. And I was totally out of my element. And I didn't know if I was going to stop. And she brought me to the intergroup banquet. And I was the guy that got the book. So when you guys got the book tonight, I know how that feels. But I want to tell you, if you stay sober one day at a time, all sorts of remarkable things are going to follow. And everybody in this room, from the person with the most time, to Jeff, who I just met, to George, to Tina, we all do it the exact same way. Every single person in here does it one day at a time. Nobody has figured out any way. No one's taking it 10 years. No one's doing it 5 years. No one gets a month. Today is the 8th of January 2022, and this is the only day that any of us are ever going to have. It's not a dress rehearsal. I want to tell you that God is amazing. I was in the elevator. I'm from New York, and from Long Island, New York, and just me and another guy in the elevator, and I said, "You're going to go see the speaker?" And he says, "Yeah, I'm on my way." I said, "Speaker's going to be great," and. And then he goes, where are you from? And I say, I'm from New York. And he says, I have a friend here that went to treatment here in Wisconsin. And I think he's from New York. And he goes, what part of New York are you from? And I said, I'm from Long Island, New York. And if you're from Long Island, New York, it's kind of a big deal. It's not a big deal to you, but it's a big deal to us. We kind of feel like the entire planet centers around Long Island, New York. And I know it's not right, but it's just the way it is. And so I went and met Jordan, my new friend. He's from Long Island, New York. 60 days, right, Jordan? My man. And we're from the same area. How cool is that? We're in the middle of Wisconsin. I meet Jordan. We're from the same area by one town. And he's got 60 days. And he's got this great, very cool sponsor that I just met. And that's how we do this thing. We follow the people that came before us. We don't have to invent this. But I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I never met anybody from Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't drink and then became an alcoholic. I was an alcoholic before I ever took my first drink. I had alcoholism before I took my first drink. And I'm just going to say, for the respect of Alcoholics Anonymous, the old timers that are here, My story is not just about alcohol. It's alcohol and I did a lot of other stuff. So I'm not going to be getting totally into that stuff. But if I say that I was rolled up in a carpet because I thought the police were coming, it's not from scotch. I'm not trying to disrespect anybody, but it just wouldn't make sense. And so, you know what I really loved about the energy when you guys came up and did I Love You, the Iggy Pop, which is so cool, is that I never felt love. I was loved. My parents loved on me. And I never felt it. I felt like I was from another planet. I knew they loved my sister. And they loved me just the same. And I couldn't feel it. I felt totally out of place in my neighborhood, in my block. In New York, everything is separated by blocks. And I felt like I was the only kid on the block that didn't fit in. So when I tell you that I needed to take a drink, I needed to take a drink because I had alcoholism by the time I was 4. I was restless, irritable, and discontent. I had a dis-ease inside me. The way that you guys carry yourself here and everyone's wearing life as a loose garment, I never did that. I wasn't able to do that. I always watched to see what the next person was doing next to me so that I could follow the lead of the person next to me. If I saw you doing it, then I did it. I never had an identity. And like Tina said last night, my first drug of choice was lying. I'm a master liar. But I know I'm in a room full of ex-master liars. Because if you don't feel good about yourself, and in a lie you can be an almost or even a somebody, you're going to lie anytime you can. Like Tina said, even when the truth would have sufficed, would have been fine. So I was always lying. In my neighborhood, like I said, we're separated by blocks. And it just so happened in my block, everybody that was anybody had big brothers. There was the Wagamans, the Mundingers, the Cohens, the Woolies. Everybody had brothers. And I had a little chubby sister. So when you would walk up to the playground and everyone would be coming in with their brothers and I had my little sister holding my hand, you get no juice in my neighborhood if you're bringing your little chubby sister with you. You get no juice. No one's picking you on for the team. You got nobody backing you up. Nobody's showing you how to play sports. And I always felt one of the reasons that I didn't fit in my neighborhood is because I didn't have brothers. I was trying to develop reasons why I didn't fit in. Because I didn't fit in my mind. And then we got a new coach that came to school. And I went to a big high school, like 2,000 kids. And we had a new coach, and he looked at the roster. And he sees my name. And he says, Boyarsky, which is my last name. He says, Boyarsky. I say, yes, coach. He says, does your brother play for the Pittsburgh Panthers? Well, that's a very easy answer if you don't have a brother. I'm just going to tell you right there. But I knew at that moment my life was about to change. So I said, yes, I do, coach. Now, all my friends that knew me my whole life and knew that I had a stepbrother that was a plumber from Massachusetts, they all knew that my brother didn't play for the Pittsburgh Panthers. But at that moment, I took it on. And it became my story. And I'm not telling you just, it's not like a little antidote. Would I tell you that I walked around with jerseys with my brother, with my last name on it? That when he got drafted into the NFL, it was like the greatest day of my life. Because when you don't want to be you, you're willing to be anybody. Alcohol allowed me to be a somebody, or at least an almost. And I never wanted to be me. I wanted so much to fit in that one day when my parents was one of the first days they weren't home. My mother was in a terrible accident. She was in the hospital and my dad was at a funeral for a family member and I was 12. And the coolest kid in my neighborhood, his name is Kevin. And Kevin is, I wanted to hang out with Kevin because he was tough. And he was cool. And so I went over to Kevin and I rang the doorbell and I said, would you like to Well, what I said is, would you like to come play with me? But you can't really say that now, so you'd be arrested. I said, would you like to hang out? You know, would you hang out with me? I'm just going to make it modern day. And he said, why would I want to hang out with you? And I said, because I have guns. My dad, may God rest his soul, he just went home to be with the Lord 4 months ago. My dad was a Korean War hero. He fought on Pork Chop Hill in the Korean War. And my dad, who passed away with 28 years in GA and 21 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, we had guns. And I was not allowed to play with those guns when my parents were around, unless my parents were around. But that day when I was 12 years old, I knew that this was something that Kevin might want to do. So I invited him over and we started to blow stuff up. Yeah. Yeah. And Kevin was into hanging out with me and we were blowing stuff up. But then Kevin got up and he was going to leave. And I didn't want him to leave. I was willing to do anything not to be alone. And I was willing to do anything not to end the feeling of at least having a cool person hang out with me. And I said to Kevin, please don't leave. You could shoot at me. And I gave him the gun. I was doing alcoholic things before I ever took my first drink. And I gave him the gun and at one in a million shot, it blew out my right eye. And while I was laying on the lawn and my little sister was crying and I was holding my eye in my hand, all I could do was think about how Kevin felt. And if the kids at school would know that Kevin did it, he wouldn't like me anymore. And so for the next 10 or 20 years, I told everybody that it was a ricochet and I did it myself. My esteem was not even low esteem. I had no esteem. When I took that first drink, by the way, my parents are half Jewish and half Italian. Well, they're not half Jewish, half Italian. They're Jewish and Italian. I'm half Jewish and half Italian. They knew who they were. I don't know who I am. And so Jewish people drink a wine called Manischewitz Jewish table wine. And that was my first drink. It's kind of like grape juice. And when I took that glass of that wine on one of the holidays, it was awesome. I started to feel good about myself. I had an ease and comfort that came at once. As soon as that wine went into my stomach, I was like, wow, this is great. And I pursued that. I didn't get drunk. I pursued that feeling like everything was going to be okay. And I pursued that for the next years and years and years. And if alcohol did for you, and I'm talking about alcohol in any form, don't get caught up on the word alcohol. I have alcoholism. The solution for my alcoholism comes from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that points me towards God and the 12 steps. And I don't want you to get caught up on the word alcohol. It doesn't matter why you're here. But alcohol in any form changes the way I feel from the inside. And when I change from the way I feel from the inside, I have an ease and comfort that can only come from that substance. And to this day, I know that if I took one drink, it would work for any type of social anxiety. Last night, being in this room, I could have used a drink, to be honest with you. I could have really used a drink. It was a touch and go situation for a little while. It would have been me and the two other guys with the book. But I didn't take a drink. And I got through it, but a drink would have helped. Now, if you understand what I just said, then you have alcoholism. If you understand what I just said, doesn't matter the substance that you use for alcoholism. I could use sex, alcohol, drugs, shopping, gambling, pornography. I can use anything. I'm just being real. But what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous teaches me is that God has the answer to my lack of power problem. And this morning, when I got to be in a panel with Tina, which was amazing. Yeah, you can clap for her. She's incredible. Let me tell you, if I lived here, Tina and George would be my sponsors. I'm like Tina and George groupies. I'm Tina and George groupies. I'll tell you right now. You see me in the hole just following them around. When I was 16, I found other things, of course. I'm a product of the 80s. I'm from New York. We did a lot of cocaine back then. I'm just going to need to say, there's really no other way to say that. I'm sorry about that, Jeff. There's really no other way to say that. I just got to put it out there, because if I say I started snorting scotch, it's going to seem silly. Did a lot of cocaine. But I didn't do a lot of cocaine because cocaine costs money. So I did a lot of cocaine on a waiter's salary. That's not a lot of cocaine. That's as much cocaine as you can do. Which is really not that much. And I'm in college. And my hero of my whole life is my Uncle JJ. My Uncle JJ went to a university in Italy and was in medical school learning how to be a doctor in a foreign language. And at the same time he's learning how to be a doctor in Italian, he's learning Italian at the same time. To me, that's like amazing. Like, I have trouble in English in America. You know what I'm saying? Like, serious. Prep a what? I don't know. My uncle's my hero. And when I was in the senior year of college, he had drowned on the bottom of a swimming pool. A multimillionaire doctor in Florida died alone in the bottom of a swimming pool. He went to a restaurant, ordered 2 bottles of Dom Perignon, and from loneliness. He had alcoholism. We didn't know. He died alone on the bottom of a swimming pool. 42 years old. Had everything in the world to live for. It was amazing. And I inherited a bunch of money. And so I'm in my senior junior year of college, and I like cocaine. I really like the smell of it at that time. And now I have money. And that's a problem. We put the two things together. That's a problem. I used to use to feel better about myself. Then I started living to use. And I went home to see my grandfather. We're Italians, and I went home on an Easter, on a Sunday. And my grandfather, JC, he says to me, "Stevie." And he calls me over. And back in those days, they would read the paper at the table on Sunday afternoons. They would read the newspaper. It's a great era. And he says, "Stevie." I go, "Yeah, Grandpa." He goes, "You see this?" It was like the time of New Jack City. And he says, "Stevie, never try this substance. If you try this substance once, you'll become addicted." And I said, "Definitely not, Grandpa. That's serious business right there." I said, "Let me see the paper so I can identify what not to use." There was a whole article about crack, and it said, if you use it once, you become addicted. I took that paper to Manhattan, to Washington Heights. I was on the corners like, "Has anybody seen this substance? You know where I could purchase this? You tell me I can't do something that's going to become it. That sounds like something I want to do." 50-50 shot. You use this, you die or go blind, but you could get high. I like that. That's good odds. I'm going to try that. And they were right. I went from the president of my fraternity, about to graduate college, student leaders committee, all this. I'm not saying I did well in school, but I'm a good talker. And then I moved underneath the steps of my fraternity house. Like, literally underneath the steps. So that I could pursue my drug of choice underneath the steps. And I didn't come out for an entire semester. Everyone had graduated and left. It was me and another girl in another part of the house. They left her too. I came out, we saw each other one night, we're like, "You're still here?" I'm like, I was living under the steps. And so it's not like I had millions, I ran out of money. And when it wasn't a problem until I ran out of money. When I ran out of money, I could see there was a problem. And I was a waiter at one of those destination resorts like Dirty Dancing, where they come and then you stay with the tables all week, and at the end they give you the tip and you perform on stage and everything. I was a waiter in one of those restaurants, in one of those hotels in the Poconos of Pennsylvania. And I was supposed to get a bunch of money at the end of the summer. And I hit a deer. I don't know if you have that situation here with deer. It seems like an area that definitely could have some deer. And I hit a deer, truthfully. And I knocked out the whole side of my car, and I called my parents. I'm like, listen, I'm about to get all the tips for the summer, but I can't get to the resort. And I hit a deer, and I need money. And they sent money up right away, fixed the car. And then subsequently, every weekend after that, I was hitting a lot of deer. A lot of deer. Every weekend was another deer. Just wiping out the whole deer population of the Poconos. Deer after deer. I was like the deer hunter. So that kept it going a little bit longer before I had to go home, because I was broke before the deer scam. I go home and I tell my parents I'm an addict. We didn't have terms like alcoholic, and I'm addicted to cocaine. I didn't even say I'm an addict. I'm addicted to cocaine. And it was shocking to my parents. We didn't have addicts in my neighborhood. We didn't have alcoholics in my name. None of my friends went to treatment. It's a different era now. You understand? Like now in 2022, it's like the fourth option. Treatment's the fourth option. Got high school, college, trade, military, and treatment. That wasn't like that back then. Wasn't like one of the four things you picked with a guidance counselor. What are you going to do? Well, I'm going to do the treatment route. Seems like a good way to go. That's what Matt did. So, needless to say, my parents were relieved because they thought I was a moron hitting all the deer in Pennsylvania. They're like, well at least you have a cocaine problem, and we can work with that. We can work with that. And so they researched. One of my cousins went to a place in the middle of the United States. Now, understand, I tell this story around the United States, but I've never actually told it here in the Midwest. So, but I just got to be honest, this is what happened. And one of my family members went to a program called Hazelden in Minnesota. And I was a college guy. I was about to graduate. I should have known where Minnesota was. It's just stupid that I didn't. But I'm like the typical, at this time, my cousin Vinny type of guy that, you understand what I'm saying. I like wear like muscle shirts everywhere. Like guinea tees, five gold chains. I'm like my cousin Vinny to the T. I'm always in the gym, so we're wearing these things called balloon pants, which are like pajamas. And my mother, she's like, you're going to treatment. I'm like, what's that? She gives me a tape of something called 28 Days, Clean and Sober with Michael Keaton. She's like, this is where you're going. You're going to treatment. You got a drug problem. You're going to treatment. So I started drinking in the house, watching the movie. Because we did not correlate any, they were fine with that because we did not correlate alcohol was a drug. And I start watching the Michael Keaton 28 Days, and I say, I can do that. It looks like one of the guys hooks up. I was used to spring break. I'm from New York. We go down to Florida all the time. It seemed like it was going to be a good experience for me. And so I packed the same way I do for spring break in Florida. I put in my muscle outfits, my guinea tee, my little, windbreaker jacket, five hair gels, and I'm set to go. And I arrive in Minnesota on February 7th, 2000, which was a year where they had, in McDonald's, they had negative hamburgers. So if it was negative 37 degrees, they had a 37 cent ham. I had never seen anything like this. I got off the plane and it was like Fargo. I'd never seen, it was unbelievable. I'm like in a t-shirt, my muscle pants, which are pajamas. They whisked me off to Hazelden for Kids. It was called Hazelden. It used to be called Hazelden Pioneer House. Now it's Hazelden Young People's that Matt told me. But I went there. I was 21. I just turned 20. I was 21. I was waiting to get there, and I just hit my 21st birthday. And I get to the treatment center completely frozen. And I walk into the lobby, which I thought was like a hotel because I was used to hotels. My dad was like a kind of a big deal in Atlantic City, so I'm used to hotels. And I'm like, excuse me, concierge, what is this stuff on the wall with the steps? And he's like, because I saw something that offended me. And it was the word alcohol. It said we are powerless over alcohol and that our lives have become a mess. I wasn't there for alcohol. I just turned 21. I hadn't even started drinking. I said, excuse me, I'm here for not the alcohol. I have a cocaine problem. We called in advance. I have a $35,000 check in my pocket. I'm not going to quit drinking. I'm not here for alcohol. The guy said, well, we don't drink here. I said, obviously you're not. It's a treatment center. That's silly. Of course we don't drink here. But I'm going to drink after. As it seemed like a waste of money if that's the end result, not to drink. I'm not even here for that. And the guy said, well, you could leave. I'm from New York. You don't just throw the gauntlet down like that at me. Like I'm 21 years old. And I got a 3-piece matching Gucci luggage. I pick it up. I'm like, well, I'm going to leave. Jordan, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not just going to be intimidated by some BHT tech in the lobby. I said, well, I'm going to leave. He said, well, you go. Now, he knew that there was like a snowdrift in front of the door. Like The Shining. And that nobody leaves like for months in this weather. Even people that are prepared don't go outside here. And I stayed till the spring. Because it was frozen and I had no clothes. And by the time it was spring, I had like 3 months. And I'm like, well, I might as well stay. Like Jordan is in a recovery house. My friend Matt went to a fellowship. I went to a place called Pioneer House and I stayed in Minnesota. And everything was going good. And I found the fellowships. I was in both fellowships at the time because that's what young people did back 30 years ago. We went to all those different type of meetings and I don't think we had, I could be wrong, but I didn't go to any young people AA back then. I'm sure they had it, but I didn't see it. And I got involved with some amazing groups in Minneapolis, Central Pacific Group, which is a group from Clancy, who happens to be from Wisconsin. He started a group, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. He's an incredible guy. And he started a group in California called the Pacific Group. And then I got involved with the Central Pacific Group. But what I mean by getting involved is I was involved in the fellowship. I love the fellowship. You know what I learned from Tina today is that if you don't have all three sides of the triangle and you only have two sides of the triangle, you're in a less than position. I only had two sides of the triangle. I'm doing fellowship. Basically, I had one side. I was a one-side triangle. I was trying to think of the other. I had nothing. I was a one-side. I was not even a less than, Tina. I'm just like a stick. So I'm walking around AA as a stick. And so I'm at my job, and a girl says, I heard you're sober. I have a terrible problem with drugs. And I'm 18 months sober, and I have no defense after for the first drink. She says, I heard you have you're sober, and I have a problem with drugs. And she was my drug of choice. And I said, well, wait, I didn't even know you can find it out here. So she was looking for me to help her, and instead I joined the misery party. I had no defense because I hadn't worked any of the steps. I only did fellowship. Guys, if you're here today and you think you could stay clean and sober for the rest of your life on fellowship, you can't. Fellowship is amazing. Community is amazing. But if you put a broken car in a garage and you don't change it and you don't work on it and you don't do the steps and you're here for years and years and years, you still have a broken car. And so I was 18 months clean and I relapsed. And now I relapsed into crack in Minneapolis in the winter. That's not like going to school in Poconos in Pennsylvania. That's like no joke in Minneapolis crack. That's like no joke. Because you're like, I'm like walking over tundras to get to the crack house. I'm like, I got a pit, you know, I got that thing that, you know, outdoor. It was serious business. The winters here are serious business. And now I don't have mommy and daddy's money. because they had joined a program called Naranon, which is like teaches parents not to fall for my stuff. And I'm like, I'm freezing out there to like get to a meeting. I'm like, I'm dying in Minnesota. They're like, go to a meeting. I bet you it's heated in the meeting. I'm like, you sent me out here. I'm dying. I'll never coming home. They're like, well, I didn't cure it. I didn't cause it. Sorry. I can't cure it. Yeah. 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 Al-Anon and Naranon and Gammonon saved my entire family's life. I just want to tell you. And they wouldn't let me come home. They wouldn't let me come home. And I want to tell you, thank you for the Native American people in Minnesota, because the only place that would take me was a Native American detox. And I told them I was Native American. So I want to thank you for having that. They kept coming over to ask me my tribe, and I just, you know, told them I was cracked out, and I just, you know, can't talk right now. By the time it was like the fourth day, they had figured it out. They kicked me out, but I was 4 days clean. And I crawled back to the halfway house that had kicked me out in uptown Minneapolis. I crawled back to them, and I begged them to take me back in. I didn't have mommy and daddy's money, but I begged them. I had been humiliated. I had been crushed. I had nowhere to go except to you guys, and you loved me. You welcomed me back, and I stayed in Minneapolis for another year. I was there for 5 years total, some very serious winters. And I'm in love with this area. And with how amazing is God that I haven't been here in 20 years. This is my 20-year anniversary week. I celebrated 20 years on Monday, and then God brings me back 20 years later. To the area I got sober in. I know it's not the exact area, but you know, from New York and Florida, this seems like the exact area. And it feels like the exact area. I just think it's how amazing. And I know my sponsor was supposed to speak, and he's one of the best speakers in the country, and I get that. But God wanted me to be here. And you'll get to hear Russell Spatz another time, because he's just amazing. And I got down to Florida to be with my grandparents, and I stayed sober down there, and I started going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this time I worked the steps, but I didn't work them thoroughly. I did an amazing 1, 2, and 3. I did a great 4. I did a good 5. I didn't have that much stuff in my 5 really to give, because I was kind of young. I used for a year and a half or 2 years. Then I used a year in Minneapolis. So I had like 3 or 4 years of some good stuff, but it really wasn't a lot of good stuff. And I really didn't really think the steps were, I mean, I know the steps are important, but I didn't think they were that important. Like Tina walks around with the service manual. That's like serious business. You walk around with a service manual, that's serious business. She caressed it. Do you see that? She caressed it. The woman caresses a service manual. I didn't ever seen that. And so I'm like kind of doing the steps light. It was a different program. It was like not AA. It was another. It's like AA plus B. I was doing the steps light. And I'm like 4 years sober, and I'm supposed to be working on my 6th step. 4 years sober, supposed to be working on my 5th, 6th step. I get to the 6th step, and it's like a paragraph. It's like you take the book off the shelf, you look at the first 5 proposals. Did you do them like concrete? Yeah. And you get to the next thing, and there's like a paragraph on the 6th step. Talking about defects of character. I didn't really have any defects of character. I kind of like my character. The only defect I had was crack, and I gave that up like 4 years earlier. So I didn't really even think it was that important. Then it says, humbly ask God to remove your shortcomings. I was like, what? This is amazing. Look at this. This is amazing. And so I got really sick in AA. See, I have alcoholism. And without an active program in Alcoholics Anonymous to treat my alcoholism, I will become sicker than I was even before the beginning. And when I was 4 and 5 and 6, I was lying. At 10 or 11, I told people my brother played professional football. At 12, I gave someone a gun, and I had never even taken a drink. And that person still lives in me. If I don't work an active program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I will get sicker and sicker and sicker. And so I'm like 5 years sober in AA, but I'm not sober. I'm not sober at all. The definition of sober is to be sober-minded, and I wasn't sober-minded. I was just clean. And so I'm taking steroids, and I'm like the typical Sopranos, like wannabe. I got 5 gold chains. I'm talking with an accent in every meeting. I got my balloon pants on and my, you know, no sock shoes. Just disgusting. And I'm punching people in meetings. I'm headbutting guys in meetings. Sober. But I wasn't sober. I was just clean. And then I see her. I see what's going to fix this God-sized problem, and I don't even know that I have a God-sized problem because I'm praying to God. I'm praying to God in the morning. I'm giving him 20 seconds on my knees, and I'm giving him 20 seconds at night. I'm like a God guy. Just going to AA doesn't make you a God guy. Just like having a gym membership, you don't go. It doesn't make you a gym person. But I'm like, I'm a God guy. I'm like picking up people on the street that are not my wife and paying them. I'm like, I'm a God guy. I'm telling like women on the street, you really should get sober. You're like, I'm a God guy. And so I worked in this mall in South Florida that had a full circus. Lions, elephants, showgirls. And I worked in the mall. And so I saw one of the showgirls. She was like spectacular. She had like the whole headdress and she was on an elephant and a trapeze. And I said, if I can get that girl, that could fix what's going on in here. You know, I was always trying to acquire. I had going to acquire the muscles, and then I acquired the cars, and then I acquired the businesses, and I was trying to always acquire, because if you don't have anything inside, if you're not stuffing God in your God-sized hole, then you're going to stuff other stuff, and you're going to find out that other stuff is not going to work, and then what's going to happen is either going to grow or you're going to go. Mm-hmm. You're either going to grow or you're going to go. And I see my next hostage, and she's gorgeous. And she's not from this country, so now I have like a one-up on her. And I like pursue her, which back then was like stalking, but they didn't have the laws yet. And she finally submits. She's like exhausted. She's like, fine, I'll marry you. And I marry her. And we have a big AA wedding. And I'm covered in alcoholism. I have my friends from Minneapolis fly in, my friends from New York fly in, her family from Columbia come in, and I'm sober 5 years, and I'm dripping of alcoholism. I'm so stark raving, not sober minded, but nobody knows, because I physically haven't had a drink in 5 years, and I have all the toys. So from the outside, 29 years old with all the toys, now with this beautiful wife, nobody was able to tell me anything because I wasn't listening. And if you're not listening to someone giving you feedback, you're already falling to the big defect of character, which is pride. But I didn't want to hear it. So people tell me, you know, maybe you should work the steps again. I'm like, the people say, I wouldn't take any suggestions. And so we're on our honeymoon, and she goes, where are we going? And I said, we're going to go to New Orleans. And she's not from the country, so she doesn't know what New Orleans stands for. I'm like, it stands for jazz. And she's like, I like jazz. So we go to New Orleans. And while we're in New Orleans, we go to Emeril Lagasse's new restaurant, which is called Lola's. And it's one of those fancy restaurants where the tables are right next to each other. And it's our first time together as a newly married couple. And I'm supposed to be staring at her, but I have alcoholism. So I'm like staring at her, but I'm also staring at me. And I'm thinking she really got a good package. She's a very lucky person. And I'm just totally dripping of myself. And I notice in the next table, the people have ordered fine wine. And they're not drinking it. And I say to the food server, what's going on the table next to us? I don't tell my wife what I'm doing. I'm like talking behind the menu. And so they go, those people are drinking fine wine that needs to breathe first. See, they had served the wine in a decanter, but they weren't drinking it. They were letting it breathe. I had never seen anything like that. I never seen wine that needed to breathe first. I went right from Mad Dog 2020 to crack. I miss fine wine. I'm like, what? This fine wine that needs to breathe first? Jeff knows what I'm talking about. I've never seen that. You've never seen it either, Jeff, right? We never seen it. When you come in young, you don't know about fine wine that needs to breathe first. And at that moment, I knew I was not powerless over specific types of alcohol or maybe any alcohol. I knew right there that I would be able to drink again. I would be able to drink again. It was never going to drink alcoholically. I was going to drink fine wine that needs to breathe first. And I was going to order it by the glass, and I was going to say "pouli fousse" and "foo foo foo foo," and I was going to be cool and I was going to be like this, and everything was going to work out. And I spent 2 more years in Alcoholics Anonymous, getting sicker until the day I picked up my 7-year medallion and I left. And I tried to find fine wine at like 6:30 in an afternoon on a Thursday. I'm 30 years old. I have no idea where to find fine wine, but I already have it in me that I'm going to drink that night. So I wind up getting cardboard box wine from a local Chinese restaurant. And that was about as fine as it ever got. And because I'm not just an alcoholic, I'm an alcoholic of all varieties. The moment I used the wine, I remember that I had some pills in the house that said, don't take with alcohol. And I had never taken any more of them because I was sober. But as soon as I drank, I'm like, wow, that would probably be the right drugs to take with this drinking. And so I went and found the pills and I took the two together. First night out, 7 years sober, first night out. I did alcohol and drugs the first night. I feel like I'm an overachiever. I had given away the program just like that. And I thought, you know what, if it gets bad, I'll come right back in. And it wasn't like that for me. As I told you, I was the guy that got brought to the intergroup banquet because I couldn't get clean. I lost everything in that year and a half. My beautiful new wife that married sober Steve, I totally abused our relationship. She escaped back to the country of Colombia. And when I'm, and I'm, this is not a joke, I'm saying she escaped because she escaped the insanity. She didn't know I was doing drugs. She thought I was having a nervous breakdown, and I was, and I was taking drugs to handle that nervous breakdown in my mind. One night my friend told me that if you're already using drugs, if you're already using the Xanax, why don't you just try this happy pill that makes you love people more? And I'm like, this seems like it should work out. And so I started taking this love drug, and I'm like 32 years old, and I'm in a club, and all night long, and I'm like this all night long, and going up and down, and up and down, and up and down, and up and down, up and down, totally, you know, asphyxiating myself from sweating and just dying. And I didn't feel any more loving than I did before I took it. And I'm all shot out. I was jumping for 12 hours. I go to work in the morning and this guy looks at me and he goes, what's wrong with you, Stevie? I go, I took this love drug and I was jumping for 12 hours. He goes, honey, come over here. What you need is some Tina. I go, listen, no. I had a problem with cocaine one time. I can't have any cocaine. He goes, no, honey, this is not cocaine. This is Tina. And he takes his little cute fingernail, puts it in a little bag of Tina, gives it to me in my nose. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. And that Tina took me all over town for the next 4 or 5 months. That Tina turned into Ike. It beat me all over town. I'm standing on outside the gay clubhouses just like, hey, anybody got some Tina? It was awful. Turned out it was crystal meth. I didn't even ask what it was. He still told me it was Tina. It sounded easy enough for me. I became a crystal meth addict at 32 years old. I wanted to have one glass of wine. I'm doing crystal meth. Lost my mind. My wife leaves to the country of Colombia. 9/11 happens. I try to take my own life. I can't get off the crystal meth. She leaves, I get back on the crack. I'm sorry for all the drug talk. I just gotta be honest, and then I'm gonna bring it right back. I'm sorry for, I just gotta tell you. I was suicidal. I just couldn't get out of it. I wanted to have one glass of wine. It took me back to places and other places that I had never even been before, even my previous addiction in my 20s. It took me to places of that I don't even want to think about today, the things I did. And my wife came back right after 9/11 and she said, sweetheart, I miss you so much. I said, sweetheart, I miss you so much, and I did miss her. And she was in the Miami airport. She came in from Columbia. She was in the Miami airport. She said, sweetheart, come pick me up. And I said, I'll be right there. And I couldn't come pick her up. She was all by herself in this country, all by herself. She just has me. I left her in the Miami airport. It's a major international airport. She said, honey, where are you? I said, I'll be right there. And I couldn't pick her up. She called me back 2 hours later. She said, sweetheart, I was stuck on stupid in the house. My mother and father knew there was a problem, and they ran down from New York. They drove down because you couldn't do flights during the week of 9/11. And they tried to help me clean up the house before my wife came home so she didn't see the house destroyed, because I'm one of those addicts. I'm one of those alcoholics that when they use drugs, they become super paranoid, and I destroyed our home. I rolled myself up in carpets. I called the police on myself. I put myself in ceiling tiles. I destroyed the home. I'm one of those guys that thinks the police are coming in at any time, and I know I got to hide my stuff, and I take pictures off the wall, and I punch holes behind there, and I hide the stuff in the wall. I put the picture there, and I act like I'm watching TV, so when the police come in, I'm like, what are you doing here? But then when the police don't come in, I know I got to get this stuff. And then I find out, George knows this because he's in construction, I found out that the walls are not solid, and the stuff falls to the bottom of the wall. I'm like, I put it in the top of the wall, now it's in the bottom of the wall. Well, what you got to do? You got to take that wall down. And I took the walls down. And my wife came back to a completely destroyed home. And she put me out of the house. She put me in a halfway house. That was not my first choice. I had a full house like a week earlier. Then they put me in a halfway house. I'm newly married. I can't go home. She served me with a restraining order on my birthday. Everything had fallen apart because I wanted to have one glass of wine. I wanted to be normal. Well, I found out through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I am normal for me. I'm as normal as I'm ever going to get with your help. And I was in that halfway house, and I called up my previous sponsor by the name of Jerry Bear. And he's a great guy in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he had told me that if I did certain things and worked the steps and helped people and did service and had a service commitment, that everything was going to work out. And Jordan, what I want to tell you, if you're still here, raise your hand if you're still here, Jordan. What I want to tell you, all that stuff is true. You're going to have a life beyond your wildest dreams. One day at a time, it's all going to come true. Yeah. And I'm in this halfway house, and I'm not having any talk with my wife. And I'm 30 days clean. I'm 30 days sober. I'm going back to AA. I call my original sponsor, Jerry Bear, and he tells me to start praying on my knees in the morning. He says, Stevie, if I told you and you come over my house and you came to my house and you came to dinner at my house and you ate the food in my house and you didn't say please for the food and you got up from the table and you left and you didn't say thank you for the food, do you think I'd ever invite you back again? I said, no, Jerry, of course not. He said, so why would you be in God's world one day without getting on your knees in the morning and asking God for the gift of sobriety, and then at the end of the day, thanking God for the gift of sobriety that you got for the day? Doesn't that make sense, Stevie? Wouldn't you want to have gratitude for God? The reason you relapsed is you had no gratitude. You weren't asking, you weren't thanking, you weren't doing anything that you took for granted what the program gave you. He says, Stevie, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the disease of alcoholism is not like a flat-footed cop that walks around the streets of New York with a donut in one hand and a cup of coffee in the other. The disease of alcoholism is like a secret service agent that walks down in and out of parties unnoticed, that speaks five languages, that knows how to use every weapon in the arsenal. And if you have any respect for your recovery, you better have that much more respect for the disease of alcoholism. And he said, these are the things you're going to do. If you have a sponsor that makes suggestions, get another sponsor. I tell you that I'm sure that Tina tells her people what to do. This is what we need to do to stay alive. Yeah. When I listen to How It Works now, it's not like with the way I used to listen to How It Works. And I loved the way you did How It Works tonight. Who was that? Who was that? Who read How It Works? You are amazing, Shad. Amazing. And I love the respect that you gave to How It Works. I was sitting in detox after having 7 years. And I'm in paper slippers on suicide watch, with a gown that doesn't fit on my big butt. And the guy comes in and he's reading How It Works. And I go, excuse me, how much time you have? He goes, 4 years. I'm like, 4 years. I'm like, 4 years. I just had 7 years. I go, excuse me, I just had 7 years. He goes, emphasis on the had. You're in detox. He goes, why don't you listen to Detox? Not like when you get on a plane and you're listening to a flight attendant that tells you where the exits are. Why don't you listen to how it works? Like the captain just got on and he said, it's 50,000 feet and we're going down. And here's the instructions that you need maybe not to die. And I'm like, oh, it seems like how it works might be important at that moment. Yo, man.
Okay.
And so I started to do things a little different. I started to pray on my knees, and I started praying on my knees at night. But I got about 30 days clean. I'm in the halfway house. I don't know if this ever happened to any guys when you were early on. And I started to shower. Remember when you started the first time you were showering? And I started to brush my teeth, and I got my hair gel back because I came in with no hair gel. It was very, very emotional for me. And I got my hair gel back. And I'm about 30 days clean, and I said to myself, you know what? I can get one more in. I could sneak one more in. I'm not going to go on a run. I'm just going to get high in the afternoon. I'm just going to get high one more day. Like I had to develop some type of junkie superpower, like I was going to be able to use one day. And then I was going to tell people, like when I picked up my 1 year, I'm sorry, in my first month, I just used one afternoon. Like I had to develop some power because I had 30 days clean. And I called my wife, who has a restraining order against me, and I said to her, sweetheart, could I have $199 for a Samsung i1300 phone? It was like the first big phone that you could like call out to California on. And my wife says, hold on. And I figured, because I had always got her before, that she was just checking the bank account. It turned out she had joined Al-Anon. Which, without my permission, I just want to tell you. Okay? So she was like talking to her sponsor, and her sponsor said, give him the money. I think that's against the bylaws, to be honest with you. And they gave me $199. Why did they do that? Because her sponsor said, let's find out if the bum is full of it right now, and then we'll get the divorce papers. If he uses this to get high, you don't have to wait the year. Give them money now. And they gave me $199. And here was my plan. I was going to go to the Sprint store, and I was going to get a phone for $15. I was going to buy that phone. I was going to call up the halfway house manager and owner. I was going to call my wife, tell them I was at a meeting. I was going to go get the stuff. Then I was going to go drink a drink. Then I was going to take a nap and brush my teeth. And when people came home from, I'd be like this from the halfway house. Hey, how was your day? And I'd just gotten up off my knees. You see, what's inside me to this day is good Steve and bad Steve. Who I feed wins. Who I starve dies. Okay. If I feed good Steve by being in meetings with you and working the steps and being of service and acting the good Samaritan, good Steve wins. When I get up off my knees in the morning, I have a choice. My good new friend Andre said it today. I have a choice to either do what I just prayed about or to do Steve's will. And I had gotten up off my knees and I decided I was going to do Steve's will. I was going to go get high one more time because I always want one more. And I went to go get high and I listened to what God did. God's so amazing. I didn't even know him at the time. I'm praying to a God of my sponsor's understanding, and I asked my sponsor's God to keep me clean and sober. And I got to the Sprint store and the guy behind the counter says, Stevie B, I saw you yesterday at the Victory AA meeting. Welcome home. The guy behind the counter at the Sprint store is a guy from AA from the day before. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity means doing different things and having different results and realize it's not you and you're not God and he's doing some amazing things. Like I met the guy that knew the guy from Long Island, Jordan, with 60 days from my same town that my sponsor got COVID because I'm the one that's supposed to speak here. Not that I want my sponsor to get sober, but it was definitely meant to be that I came here to be with you guys and to meet Tina, to meet George, to meet this panel because God on 417 of the big book, nothing happens in God's world by chance. And so at that moment I meet Drew, and Drew takes me out and we have a cup of coffee, and I don't get high and I don't use, and I still got the cell phone. Not today, I'm saying, you know, I had the cell phone and I didn't sell the cell phone. And I start dating my wife, and I'm not going to get on a tangent here. I'm just going to tell you that my wife brought me to church, and I wasn't a church guy, and I had a white light experience. And I'm not saying that's everybody's experience, but that's my experience. I had a white light experience, and I met the God of my understanding about 3 months sober, and I've never been the same since. My wife, and you can clap for that. That's a bait. That's awesome. But on the same extent, that doesn't mean that you have to have a white light experience. And in our big book, it says that many of us have it by the educational variety. You don't have to have a white light experience. It's just happened to me. And so things are starting to go incredibly for me, and life is good, and my wife and I are dating again, and she's coming to pick me up at the halfway house, and we're going on dates on the weekends, and she invites me to come back and live in the house when I'm 11 months sober, and I go back in and live in the house, and I come up with this great idea to turn the mattress over because I haven't been there in a year. And my wife is downstairs, and she's cooking breakfast, and the smell of coffee and eggs and not feet, because you know when you live in a halfway house, even though it's wonderful, it's amazing. I'm not saying women have that same experience, but when you live with guys, it's a lot of feet stuff. And so I'm like on my knees, and I'm thanking God for my life, and I decide to turn my mattress over, and there's my stash that I had hid there in a blackout. And for the first time in my life, for the first time in my sobriety, I was either going to use or I was going to rely on God that I had just prayed to. Both those guys are in there to this day. And I called my wife and she came upstairs and we both started crying. I saw my drug of choice and I didn't use it. I was separated from alcohol. God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I was only 11 months clean. I saw my drug of choice in my bedroom. My wife wasn't there. God will do for you what you can't do for yourself. It's supernatural what's going on in here. And I was overwhelmed with like you were overwhelmed when you were reading. I was overwhelmed with the incredible that I had seen my drug of choice, and I was able to call my wife, and she came up and she called her Al-Anon sponsor, and we threw the stuff away at our supermarket garbage, and I didn't have to pick up. And life starts getting amazing. And I'm sponsoring guys, and I'm taking guys through the steps, and I'm going to conventions. I go to Wikipa in Manhattan at the Marriott Marquis, and I see one of the biggest young people's conventions ever. And I'm just on fire, and I just love God, and I love you guys, and it's a big love fest. And everything's going amazing. And I'm just so happy what you guys did for me. I'm just so happy. The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is amazing, but then I put the work to do the steps, and so now I'm getting better. And I find out that in steps 6 and 7, which is really the most amazing steps for a guy like me, we're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. Man, I thought my only defect of character was drugs and alcohol. It turns out that that wasn't even the top two. That the 7 deadly sins, the pride, the anger, the greed, the gluttony, the envy, the lust and sloth, that was like my mantra. I needed to give those to God, otherwise I was going to get sick again. I didn't relapse at 7 years because I had an alcohol problem. I relapsed at 7 years because I have a me problem. And if I don't ask God to remove those defects of character, they're coming back. And now I got some money to make them bigger. And they could just not only destroy me, but destroy everything that I've built through you guys in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I'm like, God, remove this, and God, remove this, and he's removing this. And then I get some new stuff. I get some new, because when you get older, then you start having envy. I didn't have envy when I was young, because I was like young and good looking, my muscles. I didn't envy that. What's your name?
Kelsey.
No, not Eric. You. You're beautiful. What's your name? Eric? Yeah, I envy you. I just want to tell you, I envy you, and I don't like you at all. I was taking his inventory the whole night. I'm like, he's got great muscles. He's got a cute tush. I don't like him. Hate him. I don't like any muscle guys. I hate them. I didn't have that 21 years ago. I'm like, I was that guy 21 years ago. Now, like, all my stuff has fallen. So I got, like, new defects that are coming all the time. I'm like, that has to be removed, and that has to be removed, and now that guy's got a better car than me, and that's got to be removed. And it's this incredible process of pushing beach balls down in the water, and new ones pop up. And then giving that one to God, and there's a new one. And it's okay. This is an incredible process. No one's arrived. George hasn't arrived. Tina hasn't arrived. Jeff hasn't arrived. The oldest guy in here with my friend Joe that I met hasn't arrived. None of us have arrived. We're all works in progress. But I want to tell you something, guys. I shoot for perfection. I don't shoot for progress. I shoot for perfection and I land at progress. When I came in here this week, and believe me, there's some incredibly attractive men and women here. I could feel very low self-esteem immediately. You guys are twerking. I never seen twerking. I'm a Christian minister. That was the first time I seen twerking was here. And then there was some music on yesterday that I had never heard in my entire life. I don't know if you saw me. I was in the corner just praying. Just please, please, Lord, take me from this. What I found out yesterday is that I have a lot of growth to go through. I found out yesterday I have a long way to go. I learned some stuff from Tina, from the guys that were on the panel today, Andre and Brian. I saw the 10th step. Brian's got what, 10 years? 12 years? 9 years? Brian showed me something in the 10th step today that I had always thought was in the 11th step that I always thought was the 10th step. I've been doing a 10th step inventory for the last 20 years. It turns out it's an 11th step inventory. I just found that out today. I wasn't like, well, I got 20 years. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I was like, thank you, Brian. I just saw something differently. I learned about the sides of the triangle from Tina. I learned I sponsor sponsors from Tina. I learned a bunch of stuff from Andre today. I'm always constantly learning. If you're not constantly learning, I want to just share something with you. Pride has returned. If you think you're all that in a bag of chips, pride has returned. And pride is the first of the 7 deadly sins because it's the most powerful one that takes you out. Pride will kill you, and it killed me, and it killed my marriage, and Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon saved my marriage. And my father, he couldn't stand my voice. If I would speak, my dad, it was like nails on a chalkboard for my dad. The last 25 years of my relationship with my dad has been unbelievably magical because of Alcoholics Anonymous. The last 20 years, they didn't miss a meeting that I spoke at. They traveled the country with me. They couldn't wait to get to the next meeting with their son. They were so proud of me. My dad's so proud of me. My dad said to me before he died, Stevie, you are great. I'm so grateful that you're my son. Turns out I'm adopted. Never came into play. My dad loved me to the day the Lord called him home. We got to share Alcoholics Anonymous together. We've been over to 1,000 meetings together. My mom's got 46 years. My dad passed with it 28 years. My brother-in-law, I was able to help him get sober. He's got 2.5 years. And I was about 8 years clean, and we wanted to have a baby. My wife is a proud member of Al-Anon. And Al-Anon, I said, saved our marriage, and we wanted to have a baby. So we started doing baby-making things. Not that we weren't doing baby-making things in the before, but we got specific. And nothing was working. We had to go to an infertility clinic, and we had infertility treatments, and that didn't work. And then we had eggs donated from the country of Colombia, where my wife is from, and that didn't work. And then we hired a surrogate, and that didn't work. Let me tell you, that's serious business. That's their job. That's their one job. Make a baby for you. That didn't work. And we finally get pregnant. And I'm like walking. We build the baby room, and I'm walking around on cloud 9, and God is good. And like nothing can touch me at that moment, because like, you know, when God gives you what you want and nothing can touch you. And then we go to the clinic, and the nurse says, I'm sorry. I go, what do you mean sorry? What did you say? What? She goes, I'm sorry. These things happen. I go, no, check it again. She says, I'm sorry. I said, check it again. I'm in AA. I'm now in ministry. I'm sponsoring guys. I'm taking meetings all over Florida. I'm doing whatever it takes. I'm acting the good stuff. I said, check it again. We can't have, that doesn't even make any sense. Well-meaning people in AA told me that, that God will never give you more than you can handle. That's not true. What do you mean? We can handle baby dying, but another person can only handle losing a job? That's not true. And this amazing person in AA said, pray for the acceptance of God's will. And with God's strength, you're going to be able to get through it. That's true. That part turned out to be true. We had a baby's room in the house, but we got no baby. And that was tough. I'm 10 years sober, and that's tough. And turns out I was such an amazing guy in my first sobriety that I had been arrested for picking up a woman on the street in my first sobriety. That's the type of man I was. And so now my wife didn't know at the time we were dating. She didn't know. And so we got kicked out of the adoption agency because I have charges for picking up a prostitute. which was a police officer, which is not good. I don't recommend it. Because that's the way a man that has untreated alcoholism operates in Alcoholics Anonymous. He operates on his basic instincts. My basic instinct is just take what I want because I didn't have God running my affairs. So now I'm in this sobriety and I'm 10 years sober and I have to now clean up wreckage of my previous sobriety from 15 years earlier, and now we can't have a baby. And I want to tell you, when you get a no and you're at Alcoholics Anonymous, that's not a no. That's a soft no. When you get a no, like you're never going to be able to drive again, that's not a no, that's a soft no. They say you're never going to get a license, you're never going to be a nurse, you're never going to be a doctor, you have this felony charge. I have a 6-felony car crash. The only felonies I ever got, I got 6 on the same night. That's pretty impressive, you know what I'm saying? I never had any felonies, I got 6 in one night. I can't adopt in the state of Florida. But we called up this man, and because you know there's experts in this room, right? There's experts in AA. So we called up an attorney that we know by the name of Happy Bob in Florida. I don't know if you ever met him. And Happy Bob is this really cool attorney who's not really an attorney anymore because he got caught with 2 kilos, but he was a great attorney at one time. That's why he's so happy. And we call up Happy Bob, and we say, Happy Bob, don't report any of this, what I'm saying to the people. And so Happy Bob says, I want you to call this lady Mindy, who can possibly help you. And I call up Mindy. And Mindy is a Jewish woman from the next town up, which is called Boca in Florida. And we call up Mindy. And like by this time, my wife and I are like over the top Christians. We got giant paintings of Jesus on the wall. We got the St. Francis statues. We got holy water. We got T-shirts, bumper stickers. We got, cards if you come in the house. And I say to my wife, sweetheart, if Mindy's coming from Boca to be like in between us and the baby, maybe we should take giant Jesus down from the wall. Just put it like in the cup. Turn St. Francis around. Let's not be like so over the top so that when she puts in a report, these people are wackos. And my wife said, we're not going to pretend who we're not. And Mindy comes into the house and she sees everything. And she says, do you think that God gave you another chance? She sees I'm in AA 10 years. She sees that I picked up a prostitute 15 years earlier. She sees all my 6 felony car crashes. She sees I got arrested for drugs during that 6 felony car crash 12 years earlier. And she says, do you think God gave you another? How do you get a woman that's not a God woman that comes in the house and says, do you think that God gave you another chance? God. And I said, I know he did. She said, so how can I not give you another chance? And we get now we get online to get a baby someday. I don't know if you know about adoption. That's why your story touched me so much today. You get on a long line and hopefully someone from the United States picks you. But God doesn't wait online. And like a month and a half later, we tried everything, including surrogate. Nothing worked for 3 years. A month and a half later, we get a call from the top of the United States in this part of the country. And we go up and meet a young mommy. And she holds up this beautiful white baby, because you guys make some amazing white babies. This is like the area where some of the whitest babies are made. I'm sorry, it's just a true thing. And my wife is dark, and I'm half, you know, and so she says, what would you like to name your son? And we say, Joshua. And she says, why Joshua? We say, because in the Bible, Joshua 24:15 says, for me and my house, we choose to serve the Lord. Amen. And she says, I'm not religious. And what I said to her is this. It just means that your son, our son, is going to grow up in a godly home where there's not going to be any alcohol. There's not going to be any drugs. And for me and my house, we're going to choose to serve God. And she says, that's a great answer. And a week later, we come home with Joshua. And on our lawn, there's people from Alcoholics Anonymous. You know how this works, Tina and George. People with signs. Welcome home, Josh. AA people took care of the house and the dogs. And there's signs. And they gave us our first baby shower. And they helped us raise. My son was on my chest because I'm like 45 at the time. And I'm walking around AA with my little son. And he's just with his little head picking out. And he went to 1,000 meetings in his first 5 years. And you guys taught us how to raise a child. I want to tell you a little God story on how God shows off. Because God makes the Sundays, but then he puts the cherries on it just to wow you. And this is such a wow story. So our little baby, I told you, he's like the whitest, incredible little baby you've ever seen. And also the baldest. And around 9 months, he springs out the most gorgeous flowing red hair. You know, Dawn, you've met him. He has the most beautiful red hair. And he looks exactly like my mom. He's the exact twin of my mom. And then he springs out the most amazing freckles. And he looks exactly like his cousins. And like when my wife and I go to pick him up when he was a little baby, we'd go to the daycare. We'd have like 3 forms of ID. They wouldn't believe that we were the parents. But my mom just walks in there like, oh, Mrs. Boyarski, yeah, your grandson's here. You look exactly like him. You see where he gets his looks from. God was showing off. He didn't need to give us a baby with red hair, but he did it. Just wanted us to remind us that he's in charge. And see, this is what I want to share with you. The big book says that if we stay close to God and perform his work well, if we stay close to God and perform his work well, all sorts of remarkable things will follow. And Tina said something amazing today, and I totally agree with it. She said it's remarkable that we're even sober and alive today. And I agree with that. But he's going to do so much more than that. He's going to do so much more than that. The journey that you're going to have in Alcoholics Anonymous, the journey that I had in Alcoholics Anonymous. Listen, I just said to tell you something. I'm from Long Island, New York. I am the typical guinea from the movie, from the TV show Sopranos. And when I gave my life to God, I have not cursed since, except the few times I've been angry when I've been in my flesh. I don't curse anymore. That's unbelievable. You can't order, you know, Jordan, you can't order a piece of pizza in our neighborhood without cursing. If you walk to the pizza parlor and you say, give me a slice of pizza, and you don't use the F curse, you don't get served. But God took the entire vocabulary away from me, and he changed my tongue, and he gave me a tongue that would work in Alcoholics Anonymous for me. For me, I'm not saying you can't curse in AA. It was just a defect of character for me. I was cursing for everything all the time and acting like a soprano, walking around with a cigar out of my mouth, walking around like a big shot. And he took all that from me, and he gave me a new life. He didn't just give me a life. He gave me a new life. He didn't give me my previous life. He gave me a new life. You see, some people are going to come into AA and they're going to settle for sober. I just hugged Joe. I met the man yesterday. Was it 36, George? 36? 38? When he just stood up for 38, I rushed into his arms like I've known him for 10 years and told the man I love. I'm like, I love you, George. That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't wait to rush into his arms to tell him I loved him for 38. I couldn't wait to rush over to meet Jeff, who thought I was like a stalker, to tell him, like, because he got sober like when he was 4, and to tell him, like, it's so impressive that you're sober like 1,000 years, and he's like 30. And so that's the power of AA. And if you don't believe it, stay around and perform God's work well and see what happens. We have never met anyone in Alcoholics Anonymous that did the work and did not one day at a time talk about a life beyond your wildest dreams. Because there's people that you're going to meet in meetings and they have settled for sober. Settling for sober is like going to a buffet and grabbing your plate and going to the buffet and getting a crouton and sitting down with your plate and a fork and a knife and you're eating your crouton and people are coming over to going, how you doing? You go, still hanging in there. And you're eating your crouton because you're sober. And there's people that have been rocketed to the fourth dimension in AA and they're like, they have like lobster juice going on. Like, what is your name? Bijan, right? Bijan? Hey, Bijan's not going to settle for sober. If Bijan settled for sober, Bijan would drink. You got to settle for a life beyond your wildest dreams. We're eating lobster. We got prime rib falling all over us. We got crap crab. We got this. We're not going to just settle for sober. When I settled for sober, I gave another guy a gun and told me to shoot me. And I was sober 12 years at the time. Let me finish with this. This is what Dr. Bob said. Why I'm here today, why we do what we're doing, why we act the Good Samaritan every day in the 12th step. This is what Dr. Bob said. Dr. Bob said, I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want and need it badly. I do it for 4 reasons. One is a sense of duty. 2, it's a pleasure. Three, because in doing so, I'm paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. I'm so emotional up here tonight. It's so amazing. I love you guys too. Even the guy that did the thing with the tent. That guy haunted me all night. Do it again! Do it again! Do it again! I woke up all night long. I didn't sleep all night. And I had to do a paddle. Every time I said, do it again! Say it again! I've been affected by that. It is a pleasure. Because in doing so, I pay my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. That's what you guys are doing here. That's what the panel's doing here. That's what you guys did. This is incredible. This is why we have the old timers that have been coming back for 36, 40 years. They're coming back here because they're giving it back. That's why when they're standing up, they may be here for themselves. I'm not saying they're not. Of course, we're here for ourselves too. But they're also saying that don't stay around because this is what can happen to you. And because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. Listen, if you think you're an atheist, this is Dr. Bob. Don't get upset with me. If you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride what keeps you from accepting what's in this book, I feel sorry for you. The founder of the program is letting me know that my old ideas have to be crushed. I thought I had all the answers. Listen, last week when I was at a meeting and the speaker came on and they were from the Chicago area and they said this. Listen how amazing that life is. Just last week, I didn't know I was coming here last week. Last week I was in a meeting with a person from Chicago and they were doing a poll. It was a church meeting, to be honest. So they were doing a poll and the pastor came on. She said, listen, who thinks that this is better than this? And she was doing a poll. And then she said, what's better, Chicago pizza, deep dish, or New York pizza? And because I'm from New York, I stood up and I emphatically said, New York pizza, right? And I want to tell you something. I had never had Chicago pizza. Listen to a contempt prior to investigation. I knew New York pizza was better because I'm from New York. Well, let me tell you what happened today. Today I went to Luminati's. And let me tell you, Jordan, we got nothing over the pizza here. It's unbelievable. I had a deep dish pizza will change your life. A week ago, I took a survey and made a big deal in front of the entire church that New York pizza was better. A week later, I'm at Luminati's and I got tears coming out of my one eye. That's the type of stuff that'll change your mind about that you have all the ideas and everything you know. If you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride what keeps you from accepting this book, I'm so grateful to my sponsor, Russell, who showed me that there's not some false god of my misunderstanding, that the creator of the universe, he's got a first name and it's God. And he told me I didn't have to be embarrassed about that and I could follow him. And until I believed in that creator of the universe, which we call God, which I call God, that I can follow his God. And Russell Spatz, my sponsor, and Jerry Bear, my sponsor, they showed me the things in this book are true. And when my sponsor called me this last week, I didn't know it was Wisconsin in the winter, but it turned out to be amazing. This is the most incredible conference for me. I don't know about for you. I can't wait to hear the speaker in the morning. Listen to what Dr. Bob said. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking, to the gentleman that has one day, I see him there. To the other gentleman, I see you. If you really, truly want to quit drinking, and sincerely feel that you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal you have been in the habit of showing when you are actively getting another drink. Listen to what Dr. Bob says. Your heavenly Father will never let you down. God bless you guys. Thank you so much.